Now, President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met in Singapore overnight, our time, at a long-awaited summit. It was the first meeting between a sitting U.S. president and a leader of North Korea, comes after a year of the two trading threats and insults. Trump and Kim signed an agreement stating that North Korea would commit to complete denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula in return for unspecified security guarantees from the U.S. It's intended to be the first of many talks between the two countries. Here's President Trump speaking after the meeting with Kim.
Today is the beginning of an arduous process. Our eyes are wide open, but peace is always worth the effort, especially in this case. This should have been done years ago. They should have been resolved a long time ago. But we're resolving it now. Chairman Kim has the chance to seize an incredible future for his people. Anyone can make war, but only the most courageous can make peace.
Catherine Moon is professor of political science and Asian studies at Wellesley College and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Catherine, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, happy to be with you.
Well, what do you make of the agreement, a short agreement signed by President Trump and Kim Jong-un?
Well, in one word, underwhelmed. I was underwhelmed because I did not have much expectation to begin with, but because it's impossible to have a high set of expectations in a meeting like this, a first time, a first date. But at the same time, the joint statement that the two leaders put out was full of aspirational language and absolutely devoid of any specific direction. Whether it's peacemaking, whether it's denuclearization or economic development for North Korea. And so we have to leave a lot to the imagination to fill in the blanks. I think one of the problems was that the Trump-Kim meeting deliberately had no note taker. And that is an unusual situation where there's no accountability if there are no notes. And I realized that perhaps because it was going to be a light touch, a lighter fare, so to speak, to serve up, so that it wasn't even worth taking notes on.
One positive I've seen a lot of people read is, okay, we don't have a lot of or really any concrete commitments, but it's better. They're talking, they're getting along. It's better than last year when we were worried, hey, are we on the verge of some sort of nuclear confrontation?
That's absolutely correct. I would agree. It's much better than the fire and fury talk, much better than North Korea's missile testing taking place. On the other hand, we have to evaluate the summit as it is. It was supposed to be the highest level of a meeting between two sovereign state leaders. And so the expectations are necessarily higher, especially when it's a meeting of two archenemies, historical enemies, who have a serious challenge and a problem to deal with, which is nuclear power in North Korea, militarized nuclear power. So when we look at the fact that it was a summit and not just an everyday working level meeting, I think we have to evaluate it on a different note. Of course, it was for peace, to avoid war, but we need to go beyond just the hope of avoiding war and actually find concrete steps toward peace.
One sticking point seems to be what everybody means by denuclearization of the peninsula. From an American perspective, a lot of people are hoping for complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization, a timetable, inspections. From the North Korean perspective, when they commit to denuclearization, it might mean, yeah, someday once we feel like there are no longer security threats. There's a lot of room between those two views of what that word means.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And the two leaders did not close the gap, that room, so to speak, in terms of what denuclearization means, still is quite large. And it is it's a big gray area. What we might have expected Mr. Trump to have gotten from Kim is this. It is the minimal position, I would say. Number one, to get Mr. Kim to state publicly that he will continue the self-imposed moratorium on nuclear and missile testing that he already began. It wouldn't have been too hard, I think, to have him repeat that to the world. Number two, to broach the topic of whether North Koreans are willing to entertain independent inspection at some point in time. And number three, what Mr. Trump did during the press conference after his meeting one-on-one with Kim is inadvertently, I believe, basically give the green light to China and other countries who want to do economic interactions with North Korea. Mr. Trump said specifically that China has been lax for the last couple months on sanctions enforcement, but, quote, that's okay. I think that was a big faux pas.
Another surprise after the meeting, President Trump saying the U.S. would stop military exercises with the South Korean military. He referred to them as war games. It appears to have taken South Korea by surprise. The Pentagon, military officials of the U.S. who are in South Korea now. Can you talk about that statement and the role of those military exercises?
Yes, I think that was the most stunning and appalling result out of the summit, if that's a result, because that was not on the agenda. Defense Secretary Mattis had said as late as Monday, the eve of the summit in Singapore, that the U.S. troops are not on the table. They are not up for negotiation at this time. Whether it's a reduction of troops, whether it's the military exercises, or whether it's the withdrawal of troops completely. What Donald Trump did was mention very, very clearly that he will consider the withdrawal of troops. He would like to bring the troops back home, he said. And without having consulted the Pentagon and the Ministry of National Defense in South Korea, and of course the South Korean President Moon Jae-in, Mr. Trump just announced that the U.S. will suspend military exercises. What I want to clarify is that nobody needs to have such an enormous set of military exercises that the U.S. has been conducting over the recent years, amounting to over 300,000 troops, most of whom are South Korean. And that definitely has been provocative, as Trump said, to North Koreans. But what Mr. Trump could have done is offer to reduce the size and scale and duration of the exercises, but not just give it away, because that is something the North Koreans for half a century or more have really wanted, to get rid of the joint military exercises.
People have also pointed toward this summit itself as something that North Korean leaders have wanted for a long time. People have said it enhances their prestige, it rewards, in effect, their nuclear program, just having that handshake and that sit-down.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about that a lot. And, Kim's grandfather, father, and Kim himself obviously have been working toward this moment for a long time. But I think we have to keep in mind that this Kim, the young Kim, Kim Jong-un, is a different political creature than his father and grandfather. Kim is not like his grandfather, who was building North Korea from scratch, from the ashes of the Korean War. He is not establishing communism and Juche ideology, the North Korean political stance. And he certainly is not somebody who wants to go down in history as having brought the economy down like his father had with the Great Famine. And so I think Kim Jong-un himself is positioned differently. And meeting Kim for him is, of course, a hugely satisfying experience of legitimacy in the world as well as to his people. But I do really think that he has a vision for his country that he is testing out across borders.
We're talking about the U.S.-North Korea Summit with Catherine Moon of Wellesley College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you encouraged by this meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un? What do you think of what we've heard about the results of that? Should the U.S. trust North Korea to keep its word as deals are made about getting rid of nuclear weapons? What questions do you have for our guest about the U.S. relationship with North Korea and with South Korea? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Catherine Moon, professor of political science and Asian studies at Wellesley College, about the summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on this meeting, what's come out after it, and your questions for our guest. Again, the number is 800-642-1234. President Trump had said after the summit that he would invite Kim to the White House, but people are raising concerns about human rights issues. Here's President Trump giving his opinion of Kim at a press conference.
Well, he is very talented. Anybody that takes over a situation like he did at 26 years of age and is able to run it tough. I don't say he was nice, or I don't say anything about it. He ran it. Very few people at that age, you can take one out of 10,000, probably couldn't do it.
The president also referred to Kim as someone who loves his people. A United Nations report from 2014 finds the regime practicing extermination, murder, enslavement, torture, imprisonment, rape, forced abortions. The list goes on. Was there enough attention, Catherine, to human rights from what you've seen?
Well, first, I want to say that human rights was not on the agenda. It was never intended to be on the agenda at the summit. This was mostly focused on the nuclear issue. And even with the nuclear issue, we didn't really get substance out of it. So to expect human rights to have been addressed in any significant way was an unrealistic expectation. I think the best that occurred, the best that Trump did, was to get a commitment by the North Korean leader to work on returning the POWs, the war dead of the Korean War on the American side, back home to the United States. That is pretty significant. However, it's not new. Other presidents have worked on this prior to Mr. Trump. But if Mr. Trump can make the families of those veterans give them some peace through this, that is a very positive thing. As far as human rights of North Koreans go, this was, I would say, Mr. Trump's comments were, I would say, bumbling to be kind. I was absolutely stunned at how he referred to the prisoners, political prisoners held by Mr. Kim and his regime as the big winners. He said they will be the big winners from the summit. And it was just mind-boggling. So in many regards, I think he was unprepared to deal with human rights. He didn't want to deal with human rights. And he's not comfortable even learning about the issues of human rights violations in North Korea.
Let's go to a caller now. David is with us in Madison. David, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead, David.
Hi. I am a little skeptical about the whole nuclear deal with Korea because they haven't really kept their promises in the past. But I do think we should, you know, give it a chance and see where it goes. I think some of us are being a little quick to judge that it's a negative and is going to go negative. They did both say that they're going to have further meetings on and that they're going to go as fast, as slow as Kim wants to go. So I think it's going to develop into something much more solid, much more better, where we will get clear, verifiable.
Gotcha, David. Catherine, let's talk about that path forward that David brought up. Even if we're skeptical now, what would you see as the right approach? What steps are you looking toward as we go forward to get the right results here?
I, like David, I'm an optimist. So I would like to believe that there will be further talks, especially serious working level talks on a variety of issues, especially the denuclearization process. But I think the negativity is not about the first step. That's a very positive thing. The negativity is just simple disappointment that we had an opportunity to really gauge Kim on what the parameters of future negotiations might be. And we don't have an assessment on that. So that is problematic. As far as denuclearization steps go, the first thing is to get the North Koreans to agree to a complete freeze of testing, as well as the enrichment of uranium, the processing of plutonium, the process that is fundamental to nuclearizing the input materials. The second is to be able to assess what actually the infrastructure of the nuclear program looks like in North Korea. And we will need the cooperation of North Koreans to accept independent inspection to even get a lay of the land. Afterwards, we need to work on a disarmament process, a dismantling process of the actual weapons, and then an eventual disarmament, which means that they would have to give up all kinds of rockets and bombs. But this would be a long, long process, as David alludes to. Nobody expects it to happen overnight. We just wanted a little bit more of a commitment from the North Korean side. The joint statement says complete nuclearization. It does not denuclearization. It does not say verifiable. And that is a serious lack.
We'll leave it there for now. Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That's Catherine Moon, professor of political science and Asian studies at Wellesley College and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She joined us to break down the summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un and look at the road forward, whichever way it might lead.